say Frank O'Reilly was 16. I didn't know.
Hello.
Hi, this is Meg.
I'm Bob Lindeberg.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
And he's writing a book, and this is one of
the roots of Dad.
Yeah.
This is India.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the flight route. This is Burma in the center here. Mostly jungle.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is Yunnan or Western China. And they flew over this way. And Kunming would be about here, I would say, from Yunnangi. This is one of the places they went.
Probably knows more about the area than the ones that were over there.
I've been really digging and finding them. But one of the things, they have these unbelievable gorges, these rivers. There's four big rivers that come down from Tibet. The Salween, the Mekong, the Irrawaddy, and there's one other one. And it's one of the books I read, this botanist who was over there in 1924 said that he stood on the edge of this one and looked down, and it was 7,700 feet to the water.
Mm-hmm.
And his elevation was 13,000 feet, his actual elevation.
Yeah.
So this
we were lucky, you know, because we were at 12,500 foot range, and the last I saw the altimeter was 12,000 just before I went back on out. So we were lucky to get out there.
Now, where's your route? Did you find where you wanted?
We were going to Kunming. We were on the Kunming route.
You were probably coming along here.
Yeah, but Kunming was socked in, so they diverted us to Yunnanyi.
Okay.
And we offloaded at Yunnanyi, and they didn't have any freight for us to take back because we were supposed to be up the other place. And then we headed back from Yunnanyi.
To Sukerji?
About an hour. Well, that was the route they flew. It was like a beacon. They'd pick up Yunnanyi and then head for Chabor or Tezpur or Moenberry, wherever you were stationed.
So at that time, you were flying out of?
Tezpur.
Tezpur.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
Now, where did you go down? Can you find it here?
He got this pretty good idea from Vanderbilt.
I've got a map. Yeah. Listen,
I had no idea. I think we're in our route. He said we were 50 minutes, so I was
pretty close. Oh, that's pretty close.
Yeah.
Now, I located, wasn't Gibral in your crew?
Well, he must have been the radio operator.
Okay, I located.
I never saw him again.
I located his interrogation report.
Oh, did you?
So that's going to help.
He was in quite a while longer than we were, and we heard they amputated a couple of his toes from gangrene being wet all the time. You were wet all the time in there. The trees were so high that the sun really never got down to the bottom.
So you think you were in this area here?
I'm trying to find a map. I've got it.
Yeah, because we'd be down here. Because that's the route over, but we were coming back this route.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you had to cross these?
Right, then you
crossed. We crossed two rivers that I remember. The Salween was one of them. I know that one. And I don't know what the other one was.
The Mekong.
In China.
The Mekong.
Mekong,
yeah. Which goes down through.
That's where the mule almost kicked the raft apart. They get all excited.
Yeah.
And the Chinese were panicking because the Japanese had the territory just down around the bend of the river. And they were all upset about that. We were about to jump overboard and swim for it, and the guys on the other side of the river grabbed the line and she swung down.
Now, don't let me get mixed up with these others, but you lost both engines, wasn't that?
No. The engines were running perfect.
What?
We were flying along, and I was sitting in the cabin, and there was a loud explosion in the tail. And he hit the bailout button. I ran up, and the old altimeter was just spinning so that you couldn't read it. And he said, we've lost rudder. So I ran back into the tail section with a flashlight, and I inspected everything in the tail section. There was nothing wrong. There's no hydraulic leaks. The actuator was fine. And the explosion was outside. Now, Vanderveer thought we were shot down. He thought that the explosion from that. I thought we were iced. But I think the explosion outside threw the airplane off, and in a nice condition, you can't make much of a recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what put us down. But the engines were perfect. There was nothing wrong with the engines. They were going fine. So the pilot couldn't hold it, so we said, put your chutes on. And we put the chutes on. I opened up the cargo door, and then he said the bail, and the radio operator went, and then...
What time of day?
Well, it would be early afternoon, because we, I think we had lunch at UNAM.
You had flown over in the morning, yeah. And you were on your way back.
Yeah, I wasn't supposed to be on the airplane. I was asleep, I had the day off. My partner was flying an airplane, and a fellow came in and woke me up and asked me to fly for him, and I said, no. Then I woke up some more, and I said, why, what's the matter? He said, well, I got a bum ducking in the mess hall, I'm sick. He said, I'm vomiting. I said, well, he was a good kid, so I said, all right, I'll go. So I got up. I went down, pre-flighted his airplane, checked in the base off, and off we went. But that was on my day off. And had a coincidence, they were all back home at her brother's wedding, that he got married the same day.
July 1943.
Yeah, July? Yeah. So we made the trip over, it was uneventful, and we, like I say, we got diverted to Yunnan because of the weather at Kunming. And we had lunch, and then we started back after lunch, and everything was going fine, and then all of a sudden that explosion, and that was the end of the flight, right after that.
So it's, you feel it was ice that caused the problem?
I think it was ice and that explosion. I think the explosion threw us off. And usually when you're getting ice, you'll kind of start mushing as it gets worse. You couldn't even see the wingtips. You couldn't see anything.
There was so much ice?
No.
The clouds.
Fog. And they were evidently full of water. And we had no boots on that airplane. You couldn't de-ice it. And I've always felt that that it was the ice plus the explosion that threw us off and we couldn't recover.
Dave, what would you guess? Maybe ice was broke loose and hit something? Some part of the tail assembly that would cause that explosion?
No, I don't think so. Whatever it was took the rudder out. And with the configuration of the aircraft and the wings being out here, I don't think anything would come back.
Would come back.
And his elevator was fine. His ailerons were free. Just the rudder jammed, that's all. I don't think so. They'll never know. They never found the thing.
No, I'm sure not.
Yeah.
And the pilot hit the alarm button and
yeah, so we put our chutes on, went back, and the radio man went, then I went. And John said that he... Yeah, we always called him John. Where'd you get John? Was it LJ?
Ben, you always call him.
No, you're
John Vanderveer.
Lawrence J.
Yeah, and I'll bet you they went by John.
You're so good at names. I know. Must be right.
Yeah. Now let's see. It was Marvin Dibrell. Marvin Dibrell was the
radio man.
Yeah. Yeah. Sergeant.
Yeah. So anyway, funny things happen. I get up to the door.
But the plane was going down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that altimeter was just so spinning you couldn't read it.
Now, were they trying to circle or just...
Just trying to keep it up.
Yeah.
He just couldn't even keep it up. And he realized it. He knew the range we were in, and he knew we had to get out. So we did.
Well, Van said he had a pretty good idea of where, because he...
Well, see, he was the pilot. Now, I was there to watch.
Was the co-pilot?
No, he was co-pilot. Yeah. The other guy was the pilot. But he is a pilot. And he's more aware of that than I am. I'm there to watch the instruments, and if anything go wrong, try to help him to... like one time we had a engine backfire in the air, and I went up and put it into full rig and stopped it. And
this is
so
what,
those were things that
this
the engineer
is what
the
Gately had. It kept backfiring and then it caught on fire.
Yeah. Well,
and they had lost the other engine.
And mine caught on fire when we got on the ground, and I ran it up to see what was wrong with it. And then it burst into flames. But we were on the ground. That was another flight.
But, okay, Dibro went out first?
He went first, yeah.
And then you followed him?
Yeah.
And then the two pilots?
No, the pilot, Vanderveer said he went back up to hold a stick for the pilot to put his chute on.
Right.
And that they both ran back to the door, and that just as they got to the door, the pilot said, I forgot my jacket, and headed back up toward the cockpit to get it, and he jumped. And he said shortly after that, he heard an explosion. He couldn't see anything because of the weather conditions, but he heard an explosion, and he assumed that the pilot didn't get out of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, one of his letters, he implied he thought it was possible the pilot got down, but that he killed himself. Because he had talked about the fact that he wasn't going to try to get out of the airplane in the jungle.
I never heard any of that.
Okay,
never.
That's what
you said. We never flew together as a crew.
Usually they're changing crews.
All the time.
It's, in a way, that was really a big mistake.
That was. That was. You didn't take care of each other the way you would have.
No.
And it was just self-survival. I had never flown with the radio operator. I had never flown with the pilot or the co-pilot. And I'd been there for, I went there in 42.
When did you get there?
I got there early 42. We were the first batch in there.
Early 42? Wow.
Yeah.
That was before Burma fell.
Yeah.
That was when
we were supplying Stillwell and everything.
All these poor bastards were trying to get out of Burma.
Yeah.
And all these Indians, and so many of them perished in the jungles trying to get over the mountains.
Yeah, we were there really. We were the first ones in.
So, okay, on your way over, backtrack a little bit. When did you go in the Air Force?
October 14, 1940.
1940?
Yeah.
This is a long time before Pearl Harbor.
The day after he was 21. Yeah.
My father wouldn't sign, so I said, oh, I'll wait till tomorrow, Dad. That went over. They were real big.
Sure. So then, where'd you have your radio training?
I mean, radio.
Your
Roosevelt Aviation School in Mineola, Long Island. I went there for 6 months, I think it was. They had just cut it down because of the war coming. They had cut it down to 6 months. It used to be a year. It was a good school. I learned a lot there.
So where were you when at the time of Pearl Harbor?
I was visiting her at friends' houses. And,
but you weren't married yet?
No.
Just friends?
Yeah.
Well, we pretty much knew we would.
We weren't engaged or anything.
Well, we're just kids. You know, we went to high school together, and we were at our best friend's house, and came on the radio that Pearl Harbor was bombed, and everybody returned to their base immediately. So we had to break that party up.
Where were you based at then?
Westover.
Okay.
Westover. Field.
How soon then did you go over and to the CBI?
In January we left. We went down to
Natal.
We went down to Polk Field, in the Carolinas. Then we left from Charleston at midnight on a boat. And they didn't have all the airplanes ready or anything to go at that time. They were still getting the airplanes ready. They were going to fly over. They sent all the ground crew and clerical, everybody over.
I
couldn't just one flight crew per airplane over. and we went on the Mariposa. Mm-hmm. It says Mariposa. It was a converted
luxury liner.
Luxury liner, yeah.
It wasn't luxury.
No. Oh, yeah. God, we were.
Five decks, probably.
There was this much room between the bunks.
Yeah.
You had to just, you couldn't sit up or anything.
It was, talk about claustrophobia.
It doesn't, 75% of the boat came down with dysentery.
Oh,
what a, something harsh.
Right? I don't want to hear anymore.
Oh, what a horror show.
What, did you go around South Africa?
Yeah, we stopped in...
Durban?
No, we went by Durban. We
Cape Town
the Gold Coast. We went to the Gold Coast.
Accra.
And then we went down and we stopped at Cape Town. We had shore leave at Cape Town. It was marvelous. The people, all of those people were so good to us.
Yeah.
They'd take us into dinner and to the movies.
Yeah,
and
sure.
up onto, I think it was Lion's Head, they called it. A big plateau. You could
overlooks the sea.
They didn't have much gasoline. They were good people. And then we went to Karachi. And we stayed in Karachi several months. They were still building the runway up there. They tore up mm-hmm. tea plants and put a runway in the middle
right.
of the tea plant.
The big tea plantations,
yeah.
right.
Yeah, so we stayed there for quite a while. Because that was out on the desert. I think it was the Sin Desert. I think it is. Yeah. And
then by train to...
Then we went by train up to the Brahmaputra River. And then they had to offload everything. Ferry it across because it was narrow gauge on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
and so we were there pretty much for a week, I guess.
So now, but what time are we talking about now when you got up to?
I'd say, see, we got
Chabwa?
Late Chabwa. No, we went to Surkerting. Yeah, now I think we got up in Surkerting in February.
Good, guys, this is really.
Yeah, and
we were still hoping to hold Burma.
We just before we got there, there was a couple of planes get in ahead, and minimum crews were there, and the Japs come over and strafe the place, and this one master sergeant, he got out behind a tree and he shot at this Zero that came in at them, and they loved the moving target. They would leave the primary for a moving target, and this guy chased this bastard sergeant around that tree, and he'd get here on the back of the tree, this guy come in and strafe, and he'd pull up, then this guy would take a few shots at him with his Tommy gun and run around the other side, and they did that until this guy had to go home. He either ran out of bullets or he ran out of gas or something. He took off and he left. And then another time, we had these slip trenches all through the tea patches and everything, and the Jingbao went off, the alarm, and so we all went out to see what was going on. We're all standing up, you know. And here comes a flight, and they get close enough that you could almost tell where they were. Somebody says, well, they're not American. The formation is too good. And I turned around, I'm the only one standing up, and I didn't stay there long. We all jumped in the slit trenches.
Formation of zeros?
No, bombers.
Bombers?
Yeah, Bennings.
Okay.
And they came over and bombed us. But they killed a cow, and I think they got one Indian. Bashis or anything.
Dave, this had to be a real grand mess at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to get organized because the records show there's very little in the way of records until mid-43.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then I realized it took them a year to begin to get this thing organized and build all these bases.
Yeah.
And because you guys were early among the ones that went down.
Mm.
You know, there were a few planes earlier than that.
Yeah, that was my 34th mission.
34th flight over.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
What are we talking about? 3 hours in reasonably good flying conditions?
I think it was a little less than three, but with weather and...
And you had some...
It could be. That would be a good figure.
And you had some weather. Oh, you had some hellish weather.
They, because of the weather and the terrain, your missions were logged as combat. There's only two places in the world, the Aleutian and there, that you logged your time as combat time.
Well, a lot of the pilots said that they would much rather bomb Germany.
No.
Because if they got shot down, they'd get reasonable care. But if they went down the jungle,
yeah.
And of course, you have this terrific weather coming up from the Indian Ocean, and then the stuff coming down from Tibet, and this enormous.
Yeah. I was in China one time at Kunming, and we were there for I think 5 days, but we couldn't get back into India
because the weather was so bad.
Yeah, weather was so bad, you could get off from Kunming, but you couldn't land in India. The weather in India was so bad you couldn't get there.
And the rain.
Oh, the monsoons. Oh, oh yeah. Yeah. We are textile and taxi to C-47, and we had all these cement revetments. And he taxied up, went into the revetment, and then you had to spin it around so she'd be headed out. And he missed with his left wheel, he missed the cement by about a foot and a half, and the wheel disappeared. It went right in, and they had to get jacks and shoring and everything, and build it up and everything to be able to get him back up. And then they had to build, they used a lot of these steel mats over there, and they got to get him back on other things. But all you could see was just the top of the tire, and that's a pretty big tire. Yeah.
Mud.
We had one kid that flipped, and they noticed him. He was out at the end of our compound, and the road went down here to the airfield, and he was there night after night around 5 o'clock, and finally somebody said, and in the rain, you know, and turned around, what are you doing? You're here every night at 5 o'clock. He said, I've been waiting for the bus for Pittsburgh. He said, it must be the weather. He hasn't showed up.
Right.
He was gone, but he sent him down to, Karachi.
So most of the flights you made were from Sukhothai. No, Tezpur.
About half. About half of my flights were from Sukhothai, and then
C-47.
And then the 46s came in, and they sent some of the older troops, not age-wise, but having been down to augment the crews that were coming in. We had OJT on the C-46 touring it, and then we became flight crews. And what we did is you had two men, and you worked together. They're both mechanics and engineers, and the airplane would go out early in the morning, and one guy would go with it.
Mm-hmm.
When he came back, he'd get back around 4:30 in the afternoon.
This is when they were doing daytime flights.
Yeah.
It was later.
We didn't start. Well, I never did any night
flights. Yeah, that's what.
Yeah. I never did. Then you would both work on the airplane and get ready for the next day, and then the other fellow would take it the next day. So you kept alternating on it. But many times we worked all night long, and then took off in the airplane again. Yeah. Then I went up to Chabur on sort of a satellite set up that we flew out of there. I think they thought it was so much shorter that maybe things would work out better.
Gee, these guys that flew from Miss America, that's a lot of fun.
I'm not too familiar with that one. But Tezpur was a pretty good haul, so they moved us up to Chabur. We flew out of there for about 2 months, and then they shipped us back down again. Evidently didn't make that much difference. But we had a lot of trouble with the airplane, the C-46.
Initially, they must have had...
I don't know how many trips I'd start off, get up into around 10, 11,000 feet, and the engine start going... And we'd have to turn around. You couldn't climb to get over the mountain, so we'd have to turn around. We'd go back, and we'd change the aneroid. It's a unit that compensates for the altitude, and changes the fuel mixture to, so you get a good mixture, they'll burn. Well, we thought that was the problem, and the next day maybe you'd go over, and Then a little while later, you'd have it again. You'd see the aneroid again, wasn't it? And eventually, what they found out was that it was fuel starvation. They weren't getting enough fuel from the tank to the booster pump. Well, they solved it by putting a booster pump into the tank. Then they could have that problem. We lost a lot of airplanes because of that, though.
Initially, their C-46s, they had so many.
Oh, yeah. We worked 24 hours one time, took all the air conditioning out. Then they figured we can carry that much more freight. But then they found that by taking it out, the upset the center of gravity. So we had to work 24 hours to put it back in again.
Oh, gosh. Listen, when you guys bailed out, in clouds?
Oh, yeah, you couldn't see anything. I went out and I tumbled down. I went hit first to make sure I missed the stabilizer. And as soon as I was gone, the airplane was gone. And when I opened the chute, I fell into a rainstorm. When I first went out, it wasn't rain. I fell into a rainstorm. And then I finally could see the ground. And I saw water, a river, going down the mountain about two ridges over. So I remember.
Was this probably one of the big ones?
No, it was about 35, 40 feet wide.
Okay.
And it was more of a stream. Parts of it, yeah, but it was fast running. So I went to slip the chute to get over there. And I spilled it. And panicked. So I let go of everything, and fortunately it opened up again. And I, then I just was more careful and didn't put all my weight on that side. Mm-hmm. And I swept it right
close to
it. So you
could control it a little bit.
Yeah, I got right over I was about 100 yards from the river when I saw it going into a tree, so I just swung myself up so I'd land flat. And I landed in a bee or a branch and just went up and down a couple of times on the other side. But it was raining, the tree was covered with moss, slippery, and I tried to recover the chute. I figured, gee, that'd make a great wedding dress. Everybody used to, you know, if they had a chute, they would grab it, because silk, you know. Yeah, and I almost fell out, so I said, well, I guess I won't do that. And so I...
How far were you from the ground?
Oh, I'd say 7,500 feet, way, way up. You're looking down here. It was high. So I disconnected my emergency packet. I threw that down, and then I gingerly climbed into the trunk, and I started down, and then about, I'd say a good 60 feet, there were no more limbs, and I couldn't get my arms around the trunk. Well, there was one like this, down from the trunk, small one. So I gauged it and I just shinned, just held out as good as I could, and I hit that one. And then I got up to that one, and I noticed about 15 feet out there was a sapling. Around here it'd be a tree, but it was a sapling there. So I stood up and I dove at it, and so that I wouldn't hit the top, but I'd get down a little bit. She swung down. I touched the ground, I let go, and I was down without a scratch.
Really, really lucky.
22 years old. You know, you can't get hurt. 22 years old.
Has he told you all this? You know, your letter brought it to.
Yeah.
He never told us the whole. He'd smell
little here, and little
here and there, in your letter.
Yeah.
Started.
You probably thought, who is this guy up in Elmhurst? Asking all these questions.
Well, we were glad because
she's been trying to get me to do it for years.
For him to write out his whole thing, and because she said she would put it on the computer.
Well, I'm going to get some good. I think I'm going to have some great stories when I get this thing done.
That's great.
There's a lot of good stories.
Some really funny stories and some really sad stories.
Yeah.
When I was bailing out, I had a brand new Garrison hat on, and they were hard to get. And I never had one.
That's what you need for bailing out. Mm.
So I got to the door and I said, well, that won't stay on. So I turned around, I walked back to the other side of the airplane. I was going down like a rock. And I hung it up. I said, I'm going to come back and get it. I turned around, walked across, and bailed out.
I'll be back later.
Yeah. I had my gun wrapped around my hand because I forgot to put it on. And I was in a hurry to put the suit on.
Did you have your survival kit?
Yeah, I had a machete, mosquito net for your head.
Some candy.
Candy, chocolate.
White candy.
Yeah, chocolate.
And your gun, yeah.
So I lost the gun as soon as they went out.
So you didn't have a gun?
No, I lost it. So it just ripped around. I had it wrapped around like this. I didn't want to strap it. I was afraid it would stop the chute from deploying. I wasn't about to take the chute back off again. So I said, well, I'll try to hold it. But my hand was numb. But then I pulled the ripcord. I pulled it real slow. I'm saying I want to keep the evening for a souvenir. And I also read in
on the side of a mountain, down the valley?
Oh no, on the side of a mountain, way up high.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I made my way.
The stream went down. So
I also had a compass come with me. I still got the compass. Yeah.
Good.
Still got that. Yeah, it was a fast running stream.
So you followed it down the stream?
Yeah, I followed it downstream. I fell in. I could wash down and I grabbed a limb and pulled myself out.
Any of those damnable leeches?
No, I can't say that I... See, I was in the village before sundown.
Okay. You followed the stream down.
Yeah, I followed the stream down, and then on the other side of the stream, I saw a path. So, and because there was one on this side too, but I don't know why I decided that was the way to go. Maybe it was more worn.
Mm-hmm.
So I waded across the stream, and fortunately it was shallow there, and that's probably why the path was there. And I followed it up, and I came around the corner, and there's this big Mongolian type with a Fu Manchu mustache,
high cheekbones, slanted eyes,
and a barrel for a chest. And he wasn't that much taller than me either.
Most of them were small.
Oh, he was. But see, we were at we were still at around 12,000 feet.
I wonder.
And they had monstrous chest.
When you finally got off the tree, we're still up.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was way up high on a ridge, and even when I got, well anyway, he's standing there, and the whole village was there, and everybody laughs when I tell them I saw him. The hair went up in the back of my head just like a dog. And I put my hand up like this and said, how?
Several of the people used that approach.
She says, I don't believe you did that. How?
Friends, we're friends.
Yeah. So they took me back into the village, and the whole village was built on the side of the mountain, and they were on stilts to level it.
For defense purposes, they...
Well, anyway, they took me into the biggest one.
You couldn't understand, and they couldn't understand.
Oh, no.
Okay.
But I did good with sign language. I did very good with it, I thought. And the chief was a smiley guy. We took to each other pretty good.
Now, did you have the impression from them that they knew there were others?
No. I pointed to... I mean, I said, three, like me, come down. And then I said, you go get them. And then the next morning, they went out. At least in my memory, it was the next morning. Maybe it was 2 or 3 days later. I don't know. I always thought it was the next morning.
So you were alone in the village with these natives for, what, 2 or 3 days before Van appeared?
In my memory, it was like the next day. but evidently it was longer.
I thought it was 3 days, but I'll
yeah, well, somebody said 10 days, but he said he was alone for 10 days, but my memory says
it was much closer.
Yeah, it was much closer. And
now, what about the radio man? Did he?
Oh, I never saw him.
Never saw him?
No, I saw him again.
And you never saw the pilot again?
No, never saw him. No, I'm sure he's dead.
So, Van appeared after...
Well, the next day, in my memory, it doesn't seem to agree with his, I got them to go out. And it seemed to me, late in the afternoon, they came in with him. Now, it may have been 2 or 3 days, the last time.
Sure.
That before this happened, but they did go out and they brought him back here.
And he was glad to see you, and you were glad to see him.
Oh, you better believe it. In between that time, the first night, they made the indication of eating, and they wanted to give me something that looked like bacon. And I said, if I eat that, I'm going to get dysentery. Sure, and if I get it in here, I'm dead. So, so I kind of looked around, and I saw they had a half a dozen chickens, so I pointed at the chicken, so his face kind of fell. But he sent somebody out, and they killed the chicken, and I told them boil it. I said, you know, I was really concerned with dysentery. So I had boiled chicken the first night and some rice. I think it was uncracked rice. And
you'd always be safe with rice, with cooked rice.
Yeah. Then later on, they did bring this old crone in and offer it to me. Vanderbeer has that in his.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Well, listen, I know the band told me this, or one of the other pilots said he was alone with the natives, and he said that he noticed heads, shrunken heads up there, and so he was being real careful. And some of the girls were bare midriff, and he said he didn't want to offend anybody, he looked everywhere, but guess where?
The first thing I did, I gave the children the chocolate. I made friends with the kids.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, you make friends with the kids, the parents aren't going to bother you too much. But then, when they offered the old crone, she's laying there like this, you know, she's already, and the kids are using the universal gesture of what you're expected to do. And I'm saying, no, I'm married.
I want to get out of here.
And then, so she left. The funny thing is, I did look at another more comely looking young lady, and the guy would have grabbed her, and out the door he went with her.
Probably her brother or her husband. So they were really, from the beginning, they were really very good to you.
They were, yeah.
Didn't they
but
have a
that
discussion
night,
about
yeah, they had a, they had a, they had a meeting of all the villages all around. There were more villages. And around, seemed like midnight, he came in and woke me up. And he pointed this way, that way, and that way. And he pointed at me, and he went like this. I'm saying, oh, boy.
Okay, he's telling you that's dangerous territory.
No, they wanted to cut my head off and sell it to the Japs. The Japs had a price on American heads.
Sure.
And it was supposed to be $100, but that seems far-fetched. That was enough. They wouldn't know what to do with $100. And I'm going, oh, boy. He wouldn't let him. But they treated me fine. They were really good people. And so then when Vanderveer arrived, we were there a couple more days, and then we told him we wanted to go toward China. We could tell the companies which way to go. And so they took off with this early in the morning, and...
Now you were walking?
Walking.
And the two of you were walking. How was your hand?
Didn't have the problem at that point. It was later on. See, we were in there 16 days. As I remember it, and
total 16.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Total the time that we got to Kunming. Yunnanyi.
Okay, we're talking probably 4 or 5 days now.
Yeah.
When you
by the time we got started out,
They started. They sent people with you. Some,
yeah.
Some.
The chief went.
The chief went.
Oh yeah, okay. He went with us.
How many others? Probably.
About 3 or 4 others. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and
they were armed
with blowguns.
And they were very good with them.
Oh, were they ever. We asked them about them, you know, and there was a sapling about 15 feet away, and he had a quiver of the dots. They were about that long.
Mm-hmm.
And they had different colored tips on them. And he showed me a black one, and he said, oh, he'll kill you. Bad, bad, you know. And he kept that one kind of covered. But he picked up one of these other ones, and he put it in the gun, and he just went, toop, and put it right in the middle of that sapling, about 15 feet away. And so Vanderveer says, here, shoot the gun. So we showed him how to hold it.
He talked about
it. Shot the gun, and because did you ever shoot? You shot a 45?
Oh, sure,
yeah,
sure.
The kick on it?
Yeah.
He wasn't holding it tight or anything.
Yeah, particularly first.
Boom! It took his shoulder off.
But it really excited him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, sure, yeah. Oh, they all were jumping up and down, you know. Yeah, they were excited, all right. But we'd start in the morning and go over one ridge.
To the next village?
Yeah.
And sleep in the hut?
Yeah. We'd sleep in the hut, and then I think about 2 days that we were on the walk, I went out into the jungle for a minute, and I came back and there's more pilots in there.
These are the other two guys, Blount
and I can't remember the other guy's name. He's tall.
He was the crew chief, wasn't he?
No, the two pilots, pilot and co-pilot. And then
they had been brought in by the natives.
Yeah. And then half an hour later, in come the radio man and the flight engineer from the same airplane.
So there were six.
There's six of us, yeah.
Okay. I found a report that talks about the six of you.
Yeah, there were six of us then. And so we stayed there. That was.
Had they been mechanical problems or weather?
I don't know. I don't remember. I'm sure we knew at the time, but I don't recall what his problem was.
But, so now there were the six of you that the natives were conducting eastward.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many days before you came to the village where you came to the fishers, the missionaries?
Oh, did he tell you about that?
Yeah.
I'd say maybe five. That was in the China. We had crossed.
Sure.
We had crossed
the Burmese border.
Yeah, I think it was the Salween River right on the border.
Close to.
Yeah. Well, one river we crossed on the suspension bridge, and the next one we crossed on a barge.
Salween, very close to the border.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We went over.
And then you crossed the Mekong. You crossed the Salween and the Mekong.
Mekong, yeah. Because one we crossed on a suspension bridge, and one we crossed on a barge.
And this is when the
mules got excited, started kicking the sides out.
Okay, now when you first left, did you have mules or?
No, we picked them up at after we crossed the Salween on the suspension bridge.
Okay.
The next village we went to, the Chinese picked us up, and the other people left us.
Okay.
And I gave the chief my machete. It was a nice one folded. Oh yeah, we had nothing to give him, so
yeah,
I wanted to give him something.
Now,
so I gave him that.
His band tells me, and this I think this is incredible, that he said when the Kachins turned you guys over to the Chinese, the Chinese were really rough.
Yeah.
Knocked them around. It was and Van said this really was hurtful.
Yeah.
And
I know it. After all they had done for us. And, then,
and I thought after 50 years to remember that is incredible.
Yeah, they were.
Okay, now the Chinese took you in hand, and then you had the donkeys or the.
Yeah, we had the mules, and we rode the mule. And we'd go up all day and down, and a little sore. And this flight engineer on the other plane, he was a big, handsome kid, about 6'2", and
said he was a crybaby.
Yeah, things bothered him more. I was having a ball. I was having a grand time. I was playing tricks on the other guys and everything. And
how many Chinese?
Oh, they weren't very friendly. they...
And how many? Probably three or four with you?
I think maybe six.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they were pretty distant.
Yeah, very distant. They were taking it because somebody told them to.
It was a job for them, and they didn't give a damn.
Yeah, they did. And then we came to a mountain. We headed up this mountain, and a trail was cut into it. And maybe two Chinese could walk, yeah. And it was dark by then, and we each had a Chinese with a torch. My guy kept going around the corner and blocking me out.
And this was a real drop-off.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it sure was. I'd get across and hold on like this till the next torch arrived. I told him, that guy keeps leaving me. And he goes, I think they were already communists because they didn't seem to care for us at all. But anyway, we got up to the top, and it was Chinese Nationalist Army headquarters.
Okay.
Did he tell you about that?
I think.
There were a whole bunch of generals.
Was this? Okay.
And they had us in their building. It was a nice building, but nothing fancy or anything.
Did any of them speak English?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The general did.
Okay.
And they fed us. And then,
so then you knew you were in really much
better
hands.
Yeah, we knew we had it made now.
Yeah.
And he came out with a plate full of cookies, like a vanilla cookie. And he started passing it to the six of us. By the time it got to the last guy, there were eight cookies. And there's about eight or nine other people in the room. So he looks at us, and he went back out. And he came back in again, and he's got a plate full of cookies. And he looks at us, he looks at the other people. He took a cookie and passed the rest of them.
He was going to get one.
He's going to get one this time. I always remember that.
Now, this was a Chinese general.
Chinese general, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. American serviceman could associate with almost anybody over there. I associated with a Maharaja, and I was a buck sergeant.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were very acceptable.
With the Chinese, and be really forbidden.
But they didn't like us, the Chinese. But these people seemed to, they liked us.
Now, what about the fishers?
Oh, well, we went to another village.
This was before?
It was a big one now.
Before you met the Chinese general?
No, it was after. In my memory, it was after.
Okay.
Because they were still way up in the mountains. We were getting down in the flats now.
Okay.
And this was a city. And they didn't pay much attention to us. We were in a truck by now. We had transferred us to a truck.
Lots better.
Yeah. And they took us into this city, but nobody paid attention. They showed us a stable used by animals. And it was like a courtyard. It had steps going up, and there was a courtyard, and this was a Buddhist temple. And they said, go in there. By sign language, they didn't speak English. And so old Blunt says, I'm not sleeping in there. So I don't know if you want to put this in your book or not, it might embarrass him. But we're sitting down, and he says, I'll get attention. So he took his .45 and he started shooting the fish off. Did he tell you that?
Hmm.
No? I don't know if you want to put that in or not. But he started shooting the fish off the top. And they're there to ward off evil spirits. Well, we got attention.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We had the mayor down there. And we were immediately put up inside the temple. We slept in front of this monstrous Buddhist temple. And all the people coming in looking at the Americans.
But it would
everything.
Be reasonably clean.
Well, very clean. Very clean, yeah.
Now,
and we slept on the floor.
Were the fishers in that town?
Well, the fishers were ornaments on top of the house.
No, the missionary family.
Oh!
Named the Fishers. Now, did you guys?
I don't recall them.
You don't?
No.
Okay, now maybe
I... No, I don't. I don't recall them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I'm...
But that don't mean anything.
Well, I think you would remember.
Yeah.
I know of two other crews that were in the same general area, and they went eastward and were assisted by the Chinese, and both of them were assisted by a missionary family called the name was Fisher.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the fish on the top of the building.
No, this is the, and I recently located some documents that gave me more evidence because it talked about the fact this family had done so much to help our guys, and that the they wanted to go back to England, and the Air Force was going to furnish transport from Fort Hertz to Calcutta for them with the husband and wife and five children, and it named all of them, and said we will provide transportation for them and their possessions as a token of appreciation.
Yeah.
And this was great because it gave me positive verification of this Fisher family.
Yeah.
But this, I don't remember.
I don't remember. No, I don't remember any
after the
English or American or any
missionaries.
Nobody.
Okay, after you were with the Chinese general, then you continued, or they sent somebody from Yunnani.
They were still Chinese. It was a Chinese truck, and we stayed in one village, and they put us up in a barracks. And boy, we were in there about 5 minutes, and they all started screaming and yelling.
Well, you had fleas?
Bed bugs. They were in. I never saw them before.
He talks about that.
You pull the cover back like that, and you couldn't cover them with your hand.
Oh,
it was awful. And we all got up.
Now this was a Chinese base.
Yeah, army, Chinese army. Oh, there. No hide. At all. We slept, went back out of the truck. We slept in the truck. Mm. We were in another village.
So then the next day you continued in that truck?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and we went to this another village, and I'd say 90% of the people had goiters.
Everybody mentions this.
But they grew peaches as big as that. They were monstrous peaches. But they all had goiters.
Iodine.
And we stayed. They put us up in a. It was some kind of a building. It was almost like commercial on the bottom, and had an outside staircase, and it was like a big bay up above. And we slept in there. And we get up in the next day to leave, and they were working on the truck, and it was a charcoal burner. And we're watching them. And
this is not a 6x.
No, it's a big old truck. I think it was British. And he's working on it with it running. The next thing he just goes blunk, get knocked out by the carbon monoxide. Yeah. But then we get another.
They eventually got it going.
Oh yeah, they got it going.
And so then you continued.
I don't have a clear recollection of the series of events.
No.
I know this happened, I know that happened.
It's a long time ago.
Yeah, and how many days in between, I just don't recall it. I know that just about every day we were moving. And
well, now, was there a point that you reached where Yunnani sent somebody, sent a 6x or something like that up for you?
I don't think, I don't recall. Seems to me that the Chinese brought us right
all
there.
The way to Yunnan.
Yeah, to me it seems to be. Now, whether that's so or not, I don't know.
And you were
by then I was pretty sick.
Now, what about your hand?
Well, just before we get that, the next day after we met the four crewmen from another airplane, I had a swelling in here. It was like the size of a golf ball. It was holding my. You can still see the scar where they operated on it.
Yeah.
And it once it geez, that's gotta be lanced. So he took his collar and said, you know, he sterilized it with a match. And he pierced it. And of course it let it go down and everything. But by the time I got there I was pretty woozy and
to your nanny.
Yeah.
And what we call that? You cut it something?
An insect.
Oh.
Yeah, an insect bite.
Oh.
Is what they said it was, and I presume that's what it was.
And they have every kind of insect in over there. Good guys.
Yeah. This place where they had the peaches and the goiters, they took us into an opium den. They were going to have us sleep in an active opium den. One fellow was there at the door, and you come in, and he would load up a pipe, and he'd give you the pipe, and these guys would go over, and they were bunks. And they'd sit there and smoke the pipe, and then they'd lay back and
really
their dreams, you know?
Yeah.
So they, what's up? No, thanks.
Thanks, but
yeah,
no thanks.
Yeah, yeah.
When you got to Unani, they, put you in the hospital?
No, they sent me to the medics. They fed us under the medics, and then they put me right on an airplane to come in. They didn't have a hospital there. They just had a dispensary.
Okay, you and Van together?
I think all of us went. I know we did. We all went.
Okay.
There was more transportation from there, and these, but the rest of them would be put into a hospital for examination anyway.
So you went from Yanani back to Tezpur?
Tezpur, yeah.
And
yeah.
At Tezpur, did they put you in a hospital?
By then, I was in the hospital at Kunming for over a week.
Okay.
And,
you went from Yunnani to Kunming?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that, they had a hospital. They had, I was double bunked. I was on the second bunk. And after about the third day, I was starting to feel better. I was starting to get up. And this man came in civilian clothes. And I found out later he was a senator. You're on a fact-finding mission, you know. And,
you don't remember his name?
No, I never did know. Because I still wasn't that healthy.
I may run across it.
Yeah.
Oh,
but really. I would love to know who it was. He came over and he says, son, says, do you drink? And I said, no, I don't. I didn't drink and I didn't smoke. I was in athletics all the time growing up. And he says, he took a bottle of scotch, and he stuck it out of my pillow. He says, and share that with your buddies. Boy, did I have buddies.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I gave it probably to Vandivere, and he passed it around to the crew.
Now, what about at Kunming, did you have any interrogation?
No, not actually.
When you got back to Tezpur?
I don't remember an awful lot there either. Maybe they interrogated
Van,
yeah. But we were down the line waiting for a flight, and it really wasn't as a group. And this major came over, and he says, I must have been with the other airmen. And he says, you guys send a telegram home. And I says, what for? He says, you guys are all missing in action.
Now,
people have been notified.
Your family did receive a telegram.
Oh, yeah.
We knew that they were missing.
Yeah.
Missing in action.
Yeah.
Our message was by a friend of his.
Oh,
was that when you came back, you got the message that you were safe.
Well, I sent one.
Oh.
The major says, go over there and send a telegram.
The Red Cross did this, I think.
Yeah.
They would send back messages.
Yeah, but we had to initiate it. They
sure.
weren't sending it.
Sure.
So I sent one to my father and one to her. Having a grand time. Wish you were here. Wouldn't let you say anything anyway.
No,
you know,
no,
just
no,
let them know that you were all right.
One of the guys sent me a copy of his telegram. He had saved the telegram that he sent his parents.
Oh,
I made
them
at
the phone. I always wanted the one that the War Department sent, but I don't know what happened to it. And
I need to find out the precise wording on those things because I want to use it.
And then just almost a year later to the day, my brother went down. He was a B-17 pilot, and he got his tail shot off.
In Europe?
In Europe, yeah. He was in the 8th Air Force. Yeah.
Taken prisoner?
No, he got killed. They tried to ride it down, and evidently a cartwheel just before she hit, and they said no survivors.
Yeah.
We found out years later, four of them had bailed out and were recovered, but the rest of them decided to, they were right off the Isle of Guernsey.
Trying to get back.
He had tried to stretch it back, and he couldn't,
back.
He couldn't fly anymore.
I want to get the name of this.
So he,
Listen, you can't, my dear.
Oh, you can't get
it? It took me 8 months to get him. Yeah. I'm going to try to figure out somebody to have these.
Could we copy them?
I tell you, up at Warner, they said they would copy.
You could have bigger.
They copied this part and this part. I have it, then I'll have copies made and sent to you. So you've got both sides. But I wrote
that
so
would
many
be
letters.
Lovely to have. Yeah, I put a frame on it.
I know. I
put up
and I told them.
I've got the pictures up on the wall in my cabinet back
I can scan it, but the scan doesn't work.
Well, you know, I just wrote every place trying. I talked to the guys at the Library of Congress and finally up at Warner Robins at the Museum of Aviation, and that's where they have the Hump Pilots Archives. I had been there before. I went through with the.
Did you like a beer or something?
Just like something cool.
What would you like?
This is really interesting because at Maxwell, I first went through all the files under search and rescue. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then, and I tried some other headings, but then I finally stumbled onto the fact that there's a huge series of records under escape and evasion.
Mm.
And because they really, you know, they really are so closely related.
Yeah.
In fact, several of the stories I have in here are really escape stories.
Mm.
Some Navy pilots were shot down around Saigon in January of 45. Well, maybe you read it in there. And they were four pilots and two enlisted men. And at that time, there were three different factions in French Indochina that were all fighting.
Mm-hmm.
It was occupied by the Japs, and everybody realized that Japan was going down. So they were all fighting for position. Each of those groups was willing to help these guys, but they would not work together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eventually, they were put in prison, they were taken out, and they were put in a concentration camp, and they were taken out. Eventually, it took them 3 months to work their way north to North Vietnam. And then they got to a little airfield outside of a town called Dien Bien Phu.
Yeah.
And then a Major Rasmussen flew down in a C-47 from Quy Minh and picked these guys up and took them back. Mm. And I think he's in Tampa. I think I'm trying to find the pilot. But you know, this is a fabulous story. I've